Chapter 59. The gravity immediately felt gentler. Maybe this time it was actually less than Earth normal. Having got used to the weight of a troll on his chest, now it felt like Joshua was suddenly falling, as if the elevator cable had snapped. Joshua felt his gorge rise, and he swallowed hard. He had no prior experience of different gravities, save for falling into the gap. The light was different again, a softer greenish-blue. This time they all quickly unbuckled and leaned forward. The new sky was a distinct tinge of green. A sun was setting, or rising, greyish-red and smeared by refraction, hovering just above a horizon that looked close by. On the land there was a blanket, greenish like the sky, lapping against a wall of mountains and spilling into a placid-looking lake. Life, obviously, a tangle, but so unfamiliar that Joshua had trouble making out the detail. Maybe those upright structures, bushy at the top, were trees, or maybe some kind of fungus, like a big mushroom. But no, one of them started to move, eerily, with a liquid glide across the ground. And conversely, what had looked like a stretch of meadow near that lake started to ripple and pulse, and flowed closer to the water, an expanse maybe an acre in size, moving as one organism. The Uncle Arthur clanged and shuddered. "Sounding rocket away," called Lobsang. "Will you stop doing that?" "Sorry, Captain." "Well, I see life out there, Joshua, but not as we know it,"
to coin a phrase.
Maggie growled, "Will you two quit it?" "He's right, though," Jan called up. "And I can see out the window a big moon rising, with a shell." Maggie snapped, "Hush up, kid, and sit down until I tell you it's safe to move." Lobsang said, "Again, the air's an oxygen-nitrogen-water mix, not quite breathable and somewhat acidic. We seem to be being brought to worlds that are somewhat like our own, with a similar chemistry, but not identical. But the boundaries we use to describe families of life back home, bacterial, animal, plant, fungus, and so on, may not apply here. It all looks rather odd. I wouldn't recommend an EVA unless it's strictly required, since we couldn't be sure what we'd be stepping on." "An EVA? You can cut the John Glenn jargon, too. You got a fix on where we are yet? Still in the Pleiades?" "I think we've come a little further than that, Captain. If you look up, you might have a clue." Joshua leaned forward stiffly and peered up at the zenith where, even as that big sun set, the stars were being revealed. But it was not a starscape he recognized from any world of the long Earth, and nothing like the Pleiades either. He saw a scatter of star-like objects densely crowding the sky, but some resolved on closer inspection into clusters of stars. It was a sky full of 1,000 copies of the Pleiades. And there was a larger structure, too. Joshua saw a vast yellow-orange circle of light, like glowing gas, roughly centered on the zenith, lumpy, ragged, broken. A finer concentric band was contained within the outer one, almost circular, too. Offset from the center of the two bands was a brilliant pinpoint, like a star, but somehow more intense, bright enough to sting Joshua's eyes. As his vision adjusted, and he tried not to look directly at that central point, he made out more detail, wide washes of purplish cloud, smaller patches of lurid green, and what appeared to be a mass of stars swarming like fireflies around that achingly bright pinpoint center. It looked oddly wrong to Joshua, as if damaged, a broken sky. "My God," Maggie said. "How many stars are visible to the naked eye in our night sky, Lobsang? A few thousand?" She framed a patch of sky with her fingers. "There must be tens of thousands up there. Hundreds." "We're at the center of the galaxy," Indra said simply. Joshua gasped, and he saw shock on Maggie's face. "Not quite the center," Lobsang said calmly. He pointed up. "If that is the central black hole, then, judging by its brightness, we are something like 5,000 light-years out." Indra said, "Then we've come around 20,000 light-years from home,
at least. Lee laughed. Nobody at Gap Space is ever going to believe this. Maggie asked softly, How safe are we, Labsang?
Good question. The place is a bath of high-energy radiation, X-rays, gamma rays. Nearby supernovas are frequent. The uncle's hull will shield us to some extent, and maybe the planet's air, but we should not stay long. I've an aerial view of the world from the sounding rocket. You all have tablets in the walls before you. Well, except you, Jan Roderick.
Ooh.
Sorry, and except you, Sancho.
In his tablet, Joshua saw a cratered landscape, as if from overhead. But this was not grey and dead, not like the moon, not even like the Pleiades world. This image was full of colour and detail. Some of the craters were flooded with round lakes that gleamed like coins in the starlight, and the grey-green of the local life swept over circular ranges of rim mountains. It's like they terraformed the moon, he said.
Speaking of moons, Jan said,
but everybody ignored him.
Lobsang said, With the stars crowded so close, there are going to be a lot of disturbed comets, a lot of impacts, frequent mass extinctions. But extinctions can be a spur to evolution. If you survive at all, I guess, Maggie said.
Jan shouted, Will you all please look out of the window?
Sorry.
At last they looked. He'd been staring out at a part of the horizon the others had missed. A moon was rising, Joshua saw. A big fat moon, vaguely elliptical in shape, with coloured bands smeared across its surface. And there was a shell around it, cracked, crumbling at the edges, revealing the gassy world within. But definitively, a shell. A shell around a world. Maggie murmured, Well, there's something you don't see every day.
It's a moon, all right, Jan called up. I told you so.
Actually, Lobsang said, I think you'll find that this world is a moon of that gas giant.
Joshua scoffed. Don't get pompous, Lobsang. You missed it completely.
Maggie said briskly, Enough of the banter. What I want to know is, what is that shell?
It's clearly artificial, Lobsang said, inspecting telescopic images on his tablet. There are signs of a kind of ribbing on the underside, where it's exposed. I have a name for it, if you like. A supramundane habitat.
Maggie chewed that over.
Supramundane? Meaning above the world? These things have been studied, hypothetically. A shell like that around Saturn, for instance, would have 100 times the surface area of Earth, and about Earth normal gravity.
You say studied, Maggie said. I don't suppose that includes details on how to build such a thing. But you can see why you would, Dev said. It's a shelter.
Ah, Lobsang said now. Of course. I hadn't thought of that. A shelter from this lethal sky. You'd live on the inside. You could plate the outer surface to pick up energy from the local sun. You'd be sheltered from the supernova radiation and the rest. Even a dinosaur killer asteroid would just pass through, leaving a bullet hole you'd have time to fix before the air leaked out.
But it's all busted up, Jan said. Where did they go? Did they die out?
Lobsang said, Maybe they moved on, became something higher, something to which even a shell around a gas giant is just a toy.
Cool, said Jan.
Maggie spluttered laughter.
Kids today. That's all you've got to say. Cool.
Dev called, So what now? I guess we could explore this world stepwise.
Lobsang shook his head. Any stepwise copy will surely still be close to the galactic center and unsuitable for us. Let's move on.
Indra asked, North again?
North. We have the supplies, air, power, for at least one more jump.
Okay, people, buckle up, Maggie said. As they settled down, she said to Lobsang, I don't understand why we're jumping around the way we are.
I mean, aren't the Pleiades further out from the center of the galaxy than the sun? I checked it on my tablet here.
and then we came all the way into the very heart. Indra replied from above,
We are moving across a tangle of long worlds. There is no reason why distances across this tangle, in terms of steps jumped, should correspond to spatial distances, to galactic geography. It is the relations between the elements of the tangle that determine distance. In fact, there are some relational theories of physics that describe all our perceptual reality, even such qualities as distance and time, as emergent properties of relations between more fundamental objects.
I get it, Maggie said quickly. It's complicated. Let's go see what else is out there. Dev, Indra, Lee, you ready to do your stuff? After the next stop, Joshua murmured, I need to take a bathroom break.
You and me too, kiddo, said Maggie. Billion-year-old aliens or not.
Bright light flooded the cabin. There was a sickening sensation of falling and a tremendous splash. There was darkness outside the windows, and the uncle dipped and spun. Joshua clung to his couch, wishing he'd taken that bathroom break earlier. Maggie yelled,
Report, Lobsang!
We're underwater,
Lobsang called back.
Or to be more precise, immersed in liquid of some kind.
It is water, Dev called down. I'm copying the readings here. Salty, not too acidic, like ocean water on Earth.
Maggie ordered,
Keep us upright, Mr. Belaniuk.
In hand, Captain. We have airbags in the nose to stabilize us, and the flotation collar around the base. Also, the pressure's not too high. We're built to withstand far worse than this. Actually, the pressure's already dropping.
We're rising, Lobsang said.
I know, Joshua called. I can feel it in my bladder.
Suddenly, they broke through into the air. Joshua glimpsed bright blue sky through the water that streamed off his window.
On the surface, Dev called.
Lee said,
But in that case, why are we still rising?
Maggie leaned forward and stared out of the window.
Cause we're on some kind of island, and that's rising.
Cool,
said Jan Roderick.
Hoo,
said the troll. Joshua and Lobsang stared at each other wildly. Lobsang said,
A rising island?
And Joshua said,
Are you thinking what I'm thinking?